I 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I declare the meeting open. Marion Council, full of surprises. The Kaurna people, we acknowledge they're the traditional custodians of this land. We pay our respects to their elders past and present. I let everyone know that the meeting will be recorded, that is to say the audio will be made available on the City of Marion website. I now have a large computer monitor in front of me. That's for my own protection. But I can still see over it.
It's all right.
Yep. I ask whether any elected members wish to foreshadow a declaration of interest in respect of any items on the agenda. No, I'll keep moving. Councillor Blescu might have something.
I know one of the applicants for the youth grant, so I'll remove myself from the vote just because I've been supporting their group, and it might just be easier not to vote on that.
Thank you. I'll just check that the Acting Manager Governance has made a note of that. All right. I have a conflict of interest to declare in respect of one of the topics in the Housing Diversity DPA item. So I propose to invite the Deputy Mayor to take the chair while that issue was addressed, and then I'll resume the chair for the remainder of the item when we get to it. The reason for the conflict of interest is that I have an interest in real estate in the Oaklands estate, and so that's the topic I'll be avoiding. Confirmation of minutes. Would someone like Councillor Pryor?
Yeah, I have a tenuous link to a family member who may be associated with the Hallett Cove School, so I'll be stepping out for the youth grants as well, provided we still have a quorum.
Thank you for noting that. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it. I'm aware of a couple of apologies and one councillor who'll be coming later, so we'll see how we go. We might have to explore the tenuousness of that connection. We'll explore that later. Do you want to explore it now, Acting Manager Governance?
Under the actual perceived conflicts of interest, one of the exemptions is when it's a relationship with somebody at the school. So you may actually be able to, we can note it, but you don't need to leave the room if that's the only interest that you have.
Yeah, that sounds great to me. I'm more than happy to stay in the room. That's good. Cheers.
So we've got enough information to note that. And Councillor Crossland.
Sorry, Worship, I've probably got a similar perceived conflict of interest. I am the liaison officer for the school, but I also have a family member that works at the school. Is that an actual?
I mean, it's a family member that works at the school, and the grant in question is going to whom as the recipient? The actual school, or is an activity taking place at the school?
My connection is not with a student who will benefit from the grant, which is why I would say it's more of a perceived conflict of interest.
All right, so we'll note that accordingly. And for those in the gallery, excuse the pedantry of these discussions, but state government legislation is now incredibly onerous to the point of being unworkable in relation to conflicts of interest, so we have to take great care with it. Would someone like to move that the minutes of the last General Council meeting be confirmed? Moved, Councillor Blescu, seconded, Councillor Pryor. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. Would someone like to... Is this the second? No, it's not. It's the only council meeting of the month. But would someone like to move that reports of Mayor, Deputy Mayor, elected member, Chief Executive be accepted? Moved Councillor Gard, seconded Councillor Valescu. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously, thank you. We have two deputations booked in for this evening. The first one, and I should say I'll ask these people to come up and I'll invite Council to then bring forward the relevant motions, which is our custom. The first one in relation to the Learning to Drive program. So the reference to the deputations on page 29 and shortly after that, page 31, is the actual item which was adjourned from the last General Council meeting. So I'll ask, who do we have? I'll ask Mariki Webber to come forward, please. And we have a space for you at the front counter. And as I think you're aware, the specific question that arose at the beginning, up here would be great. The specific question that arose at the last General Council meeting was, how can an adequate assessment be made of the financial need of the potential recipients? Because Council wanted to know, well, by implication, that it's a well-targeted program. So if you could, you have 5 minutes, if you could describe what you currently do and how you've taken Council's concerns into account, that would be great. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor Hannah, councillors and community members. Thank you for having me here tonight. My name is Mariki. I'm from HIPER and I'm the program coordinator for a program called Gear to Drive. HIPER is a division of SYC. We're a non-for-profit organisation centred on employment, education and youth services. In the last year, HIPER has supported and assisted over 5,300 young people to assess and maintain safe and appropriate accommodation, to reconnect with family, school, employment and the community. Gear to Drive is a learner-driver program designed to help break the barrier of people struggling to achieve the supervised hours to get their provisional driving lessons license. A requirement to get your P's is that you complete 75 hours of supervised driving. Not having access to a vehicle, friend or family member to take you out to get your hours is a huge barrier in gaining a license. And in fact, if they were to have to do those lessons with a professional driving instructor, this could exceed $6,000. As we all know, getting a driving licence gives us independence. It can make it easier to gain employment, access to education, be involved in the community, and gives us more flexibility when finding accommodation. For a small participant fee of $10 per session, Gear to Drive utilises the support of volunteers to supervise learner drivers using dedicated Gear to Drive vehicles whilst encouraging safe driving practices. The aim of this program in the Marion region would be to assist young people and new arrivals of all ages who are lacking the social supports to assist them to achieve their supervised driving hours. Whilst this program in Adelaide has previously been aimed at young people under the age of 25, our demographic has always included a high number of culturally and linguistically diverse participants.
Mariki, I'm sorry to interrupt. I don't normally interrupt deputations, but there was that specific question that we wanted you to address. Now, all of that material is quite valuable, but yep. We already have that in our written report, so it will probably make the best use of your time to go onto that assessment criteria question and maybe come back to this if there's time.
Okay,
thank you.
So the eligibility criteria for the Gear to Drive program, as it stands, we do have the age barrier in the Adelaide region, but we are willing to open that up and allow all people of all ages to really target it at new arrivals. To the country. They would be required to have an Australian learner's permit. They need to have no access to a supervised driver, have 5 professional driving lessons to ensure they are safe to hop in our cars with volunteers, and having driving checklist signed off by a professional driving school. Now, we have been asked the question around means testing, and it's not something that HIPER do. It's not something that we do for any of our programs. And the reason for that is that our Gear to Drive program is really targeted at people who are disadvantaged in the area of not having anyone to drive with. We believe that means testing would disallow a lot of people into the program and also not correlate with the program as it runs in the city. So what would happen is that they wouldn't be eligible for the program in the Marion region, but they would be eligible in the city, thus making it really quite a large distance for them to travel. The people who have accessed our program in the past come from a really, really wide range of backgrounds. All are disadvantaged and have very, very different stories. they may not have a healthcare card, they may have a parent who earns too much money to make them eligible for a healthcare card, but still be disadvantaged and not have anyone to drive with. Does that answer your question around that?
Well, it might be helpful
to see if any councillors have specific questions in relation to that. Councillor Valescu.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. I guess to that I would say that it'd be extremely difficult for anybody to afford $6,000 for professional driving lessons to complete the 75 hours. I can give you some examples of that, I guess. If we've had a young man come in who was unable to get work because he didn't have a driving license. He entered the Geared to Drive program, and very shortly after doing that, he was able to obtain work on the condition that he was working towards his driving lessons. At that point, he gained employment. He was earning money, but we weren't going to boot him out of the program because obviously that was a condition towards that, which then would have made him ineligible for UO during the means testing. Another example, I had a young lady in a participant workshop yesterday who was 16 and had a four-month-old baby. Her mother had a vehicle, but it was a manual, and she was really, really stressed out driving in that vehicle. Also, her mother was the only carer for the baby, so the only option would be to take her four-month-old baby out, learning to drive in a manual. So obviously that option there, it wasn't there for her. She wasn't able to drive with her mum, which made her eligible for the program. Now, if we did means testing around her, she wouldn't be able to get into our program.
Councillor Hull, you raised the question the last meeting. Did you want to follow up anything now?
Certainly, I concur with Councillor Blesker. This is non-core business. Not unusual for councils to look at non-core business items.
Yep.
And I have got some natural tendencies towards supporting this. But we were actually told when this last came up that there was a means test. So obviously that was not the right information that we received from staff. Now, I just have a clear question for you. Who makes, you say that they're disadvantaged.
Yeah.
Who makes that assessment? Who makes that call? I'd like to understand that better.
Yeah. So the disadvantage that we're looking at is them not having anyone to drive with. So not having access to a supervised driver and not having any way to be able to get those 75 hours to get their licence. So we who developed the program made that call on that. It also aligns with all of the values of SYC and HYPER. We don't do means testing in any of our programs except for one housing program where it's relevant for identifying the rent. The way that we identify that they don't have anyone to drive with is that we get their logbooks off them. So we take control of their logbooks. If they were asking for these back and regularly driving with a parent, caregiver, they would then be suspended for the program and we'd give the position to somebody more in need. In the entire history of Geared to Drive running, I never would have assessed anybody as not being in need in our program. Probably the cold demographic is probably about 60 or 70% of the young people that do come through. These are young people who have recently arrived to the country and don't have anyone else to drive with. They don't have a parent who's had a licence for 2 years who can take them out to do that. Everybody else, they come with a really, really wide range of different stories and are all classified as disadvantaged under what HYPER call disadvantaged youth and who we do assist.
So, well, perhaps I could chip in with a hypothetical. Like, we've got Westminster College in the city of Marion.
Mm-hmm.
This could be quite popular with boarders at the Westminster College. Would that seem to fit to you?
That's something that we haven't come across in the program. To be honest, we haven't come across that scenario in our program. And we are in the area of Scotch College and other boarding colleges in the city.
You raise a very good point, Mayor Hannah, that students going to Westminster College, the admission fees there are significant. Quite often they're kids that are from the land, mum and dad may or may not be doing it hard. You know, some I know that they get dropped off in the Lexus, life's good. But it doesn't sound to me that, in terms of reputational risk for this organisation, if it comes to light that Wealthy Grazier's son is getting free driving lessons, compliments to the City of Marion ratepayers, I think that would be a headline for the Messenger Press. And that's the only thing that worries me about this, Mayor Hannah. I know there's the vibe. The vibe is, well, you know, these are people that really need a bit of a leg up to become self-sufficient and succeed in our communities. And I have some sympathy for that, but I'd like to close up the gap for reputational risk.
Yeah. Okay, we're just at the time for questions while Meraki is here rather than debate at the moment. Councillor Blescu?
Wondering whether it's possible to include something as far as eligibility that there are significant financial constraints on the people when they enter the program. That way, if this program does help them get work and better their lives, they can continue it, but at the time of doing it, because obviously you want them to get work through it, so I'm just wondering if that's something that can work.
A lot of the issue around the means testing is how we actually police that, and the fact that these young people are coming with so many different stories. They might not be able to have access to a healthcare card because they come under their parents, but their parents aren't actually giving them any support. So I believe that it would actually exclude some people. What we would be more inclined to do is only accept people who are referred on from migrant agencies or the Australian Refugee Association or young people enrolled in flexible learning options programs. That would be more what we'd be inclined to do, and really, really push out promotion of this program into those areas. So definitely adding a criteria like that, that they need to be referred on from one of those agencies, would be something that we would look at. But as far as the means testing go, there are just too many variables that would end up excluding people from that and cause confusion around the program, especially with it running in the city and soon to be in Onkaparinga as well. There'd sort of be the Marion Ridge in the middle, which would exclude people.
Councillor Appleby?
Given the burdens being imposed by the state government, do you think it would be better if the initiative were funded by them?
There's definitely things that we're looking into. So at the moment, this is being proposed as a trial for the Marion Region. We are in the process of putting together a report to take to some major players like RAA and the Motor Accident Commission, and definitely to state and federal funding. There is a very, very similar program in Queensland that's just been funded by state government and received $4 million to run this program there. So these are the sort of things that we're looking for and definitely working towards for next financial year. Obviously, getting the statistics from out that running in the city for so long, with Onkaparinga running and the City of Marion potentially coming on board, we're going to look very, very strong moving forward to gain some funding and take the financial pressure off the council as well. The plan is to run this free of charge for you moving forward.
Any other questions? Then I think Erica will
thank you very much.
Your advice, and then we'll move on if council wishes to debate that particular motion. So you can take your place in the gallery again. Thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you very much.
You're free to stay or free to go any time you like. With the leave of the council, shall we deal with that motion on page 31 now? Page 31, of course, is just very short, but it has the previous motion appended to it, so you've got all the information. Any takers? Question, Councillor Hull?
The point made before about having an inclusion about an NGO referral, can that actually be picked up in the motion?
It would probably be impossible to do justice to it tonight because I think what you would want to see is Marion Council staff working with HIPAA or with the SYC to work out which agencies, you know, how would they refer and so forth. So there were some good options mentioned tonight, but we wouldn't want to have a prescriptive list tonight that didn't cover the question adequately. So it may be a deferral if that's what you've got in mind. Councillor Valescu?
Could we put something in the motion saying that council and staff work out with HIPAA and process for external referrals to the program, where external referral points provide people through with the most disadvantage, or that there's some sort of screening done through those agencies? Like, it's not a lot of money.
Yeah, I understand. Councillor Blescu, I'm conscious that in the previous report we had, which is on your halfway down your current page 34, it talks about council has worked with HIPAA on the inclusion of a financial means assessment. HIPAA is confident the current participant recruitment form will adequately address eligibility concerns. Doesn't believe there is a need to incorporate financial means assessments or questions into the proposed program for Marion. But if that's the concern, that and I'm picking that up, then all we need to do is move for the matter to be deferred, perhaps to the end of August, for example, the 2nd August meeting, and staff can simply take that on notice that that's the sort of assessment process which councillors might have an interest in. In other words, you don't need to detail the reason for the deferral. Councillor Valescu, still on the question sort of frame of mind, or Councillor Crossland?
Your Worship, I'd like just to move the motion as is, and then I'll speak to it if it's seconded.
All right, so it's moved, Councillor Crossland. It's seconded, Councillor Valescu. Councillor Crossland.
Yeah, thank you. Now, obviously, I'm not always a great fan of non-core council business, but I see this as more than just the driving. It is about getting young people out there into jobs, which will give them a great advantage over other people without a driving licence. We do need our young people to get any advantage they can in the current work market. And I've listened to the risks. We talked about it a lot. It is for Marion residents. I think that if somebody put down Westminster School as their home address, there would be questions raised. It's a one-year program to trial. There's been no problems with it running in other council areas. I personally don't want to see staff time involved in assessing, reassessing. I think there's checks and balances in place within HIPAA, and I think we should let that take its course. I personally think it's a very low risk for the amount we're paying, with huge potential benefits. So I'm happy with the motion as printed.
There was a reference there to it being a one-year trial. I'm not sure if it's 6 months or 12 months. Settle for nine in between? Okay.
Yeah, I was just referring to it comes out of the 17-18 budget reference.
Yeah. So just a clarification, that's fine. It was seconded by Councillor Valescu. Do you wish to speak?
Yeah, look, I think it is going to be a valuable program. I think there's an advantage if we're able to be part of the trial that gets some state funding into this, into the future. We do have an election coming up. It would be great if both parties of government are able to put some money towards this sort of project, because they're better placed to do so. And I do trust that the good work that HIPAA does will make sure that the people that get this are those that need it most in our community.
Thank you. Anyone speaking against the motion? Councillor Appleby.
Thank you, Your Worship. I really see this as a state government issue. This issue has arisen because of changes they've made. We all would have got our driver's licences under the old system. I think that worked well. They've created this problem, and I think they should be the ones that need to rectify. I don't think we should be coming in to save them, and I think we can't decry the state government cost shifting if we're going to voluntarily take this upon ourselves.
Yes, the good old days when we had the state government-owned driver training centre. Yes. Councillor Hull?
I'll speak in favour of the motion, Mr Mayor, but I want to make the strong point that, and hopefully Hyper have taken on board our concerns, that we don't want to hear a story about a magnate's son or daughter, you know, getting a driver's licence compliments of us. That they will be responsible enough to realise that is not a good look in any circumstance. That this is for disadvantaged people, and disadvantaged being disadvantaged. The fact that mummy or daddy can't come along to hold their hand on the day, to me, is not disadvantaged. That means that there might be some parental issues or something like that. But look, you know, this is ratepayers' money, and we need to be responsible with it. I take Councillor Appleby's point that if we are really in the business of deflecting cost shifting, this is probably not the best way to go. However, having said that, nobody else is doing it. And the fact that nobody else is doing it means that often the councils, being the closest government to the people, acknowledge the need and respond to it. And that's what we're doing tonight. So I've made my point, and it is a trial. If there is any concerns during the nine-month period, during that gestational period, then it could not be continued.
Right. Any other speakers against? Then did the mover wish to say anything in reply?
Just briefly, Your Worship, I don't believe that this has any connection to cost shifting. I think the additional hours imposed by the state government don't benefit the state government at all. In fact, we, the community, benefit because the whole intention of those additional hours was to produce better drivers and to improve road safety. So there is no cost shifting in this situation.
All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against? That's carried. Thank you. And now we turn to a deputation from Ken Parnell and Barry Veltmeyer from the Marion RSL. Please come forward, and we'll accommodate you here at the front of the chamber. Speaking about the aspirations for a playground at the Marion RSL, councillors will note the actual motion that's related to this is on page 401. And so... there's already been a written submission from the RSL, but gentlemen, you have 5 minutes, so please feel free.
Thank you very much, Your Worship. Councillors, thank you for listening to us and giving us some time. As you're aware, the Marion RSL is just over 500 metres from where we are now. We're looking at putting in a playground for our veterans, children, grandchildren, and also for the hundreds of children who come to our club each week. We're a bit different to the playground directly across the road here at the Marion Centre. Being a member of both clubs, I do walk between them. Their playground's mainly used on a Saturday and Sunday when there's sport on. Our playground would be used all the time because we have over 200 children between Monday to Friday come through the club either doing ballet, calisthenics, or some form of exercise to get their little bodies moving on. We've been attempting for this for the last 33 years through five different mayors, and it's great to be sitting in front of you at last. The Marion RSL, obviously we're an RSL. We're not just an RSL. We opened it to the community in 1989 and called ourselves the Marion RSL and Community Centre, although you had your own community centre here. So we were proactive in doing that a long, long time ago. In 1990, we banned smoking in the club, a long time before the government even thought about it, because we cared about our members and their children, and it was just too much. At the Marion RSL now, we have a lot of first responders coming to the club because they can come there and feel comfortable. Police, fire, ambulance, SES, they're all starting to come and join the club now because they know they can come in there, relax with their children and not have any problems that you might have in a hotel environment because of the positions that they hold. Currently at the club we have a 40-60 Bofa, a 5-pounder gun and a Leopard tank. These three items do have insurance and insurance cover, and the same insurance cover would come in under a playground scenario for public liability damage. When I say damage, people falling off them. If you know how big a Leopard tank is, you'll understand they could fall a fair way onto straight concrete. So we're very, very careful. At the moment, we have 60 people a week hopping on the tank. When I say people, I'm mainly, it'd be 90% children, and running up and down, and mum and dad taking photos. We've had films done at the RSL on the Leopard tank with children running up and down on them. And with the Leopard tank and the filming and the guns, we have over 30 different nationalities now, members of the club and who have joined the club. And a lot of these people come and use the tank or the guns to explain Australia back to their home country, that we're not the big bad place. If you can understand where I'm coming from in that without going into it any further. When we saw that, you know, my last try was 3.5 years ago with Mayor Felicity, which started again. It's the third time with Mayor Felicity. But then when I saw in the paper that you had done a budget for the replacement of some playgrounds, I wanted to say, OK, we don't want a new playground off you. We don't expect you to spend $200,000-$400,000 on a playground. What we want is the ability to grab items that are coming out of the old playground so that we may have them brought up to standard at our cost, made legal by our cost, installed by your contractor who currently does the playgrounds at his cost, so to save us cost in finally putting one in. His name's Luke Turner. He's a contractor for the council, has been for 7 years, and he's a great asset to our club. We've had Amy Lidicott from Open Space Coordinator come over to the club in the last week and sit down and talk with us, go through the area that we nominated, and she said, yes, it's excellent, said that we were going to trim back the ghost tree so no branches would be over it. Again, part of insurance, and, you know, we have our own occupational health and safety and duty of care also, which, of course, we'll look after. So, really here, hands open, begging to see if you can assist us and allow us to do it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you want to add any? Barry?
You've got a... No, Ken's hit it on the head. I took over from Ken a few years ago in improvements, repairs and maintenance. I'm an ex-military person. I did over 35 years. And I decided to stop in Finnis Street. So I adopted the club, and it wasn't really what I was after, being an RSL member, but it is a... Actually, I've been doing it a few years now, and the Vice President and the improvements, and I'm running 4 or 5 schemes, work for the Dole, Centrelink. We're heavily involved with the community, and this actually employs these people, and the work rate that are coming out of the RSL now. A lot of people don't know the kids, the people that are involved, because it's a great area over there that we lease. Yes. That we lease from you guys.
Yep. But thanks for the wrap. Yep. Any questions from members, Councillor Hull?
It's a great initiative, but there's one burning question I have. There's poker machines in your facility, and I'd like to know whether there's going to be some governance of that in terms of some of the patrons may not provide the parental guidance that we would like, and using the poker machines lose sight of the fact they've got kids in the playground. I'd like to know whether that could be something that you could pick up in your governance of this going forward.
Ken?
Yes, thank you, Your Worship. Yes, thank you very much, Councillor Hull, for that. Yes, it's quite simple. We have an area that is caged off for the poker machines. There are signs on both sides of the doorways, large signs, 750 by 500, which state no children allowed. Further that, we have CCTV on the area, and we have a duty officer at the club to ensure that children don't go in. Now, can that stop children going in?
Ken, I think that the question was actually more like, if there's a playground, could that become a childcare centre for
parents who are going in to play the pokies. That might have been more the issue.
We don't have any children. We don't have any people who come there to play the pokies. We've only got 8 machines. It's a very small area, and none of them bring children at this current stage. I can't guarantee that won't happen in the future.
The Mayor is right in taking the right direction on the question, is that if you do have a playground, can you have some governance arrangements where parents are not in playing the poker machine while their kids are left in the playground?
That's yes,
the
most question. Definitely. We can write a bylaw and through our duty officer in the committee ensure that that does not happen, and we're prepared to do that.
And police it.
Okay. That's why we have the duty officer. That's a person who isn't licensed for poker machines. That's a person who's licensed in the club to keep the laws of the club and to keep the governments of the liquor industries.
Okay, any other questions? Then thank you, Ken and Barry, and you're welcome to take your place in the gallery. Leave the meeting any stage you wish, but I'll ask leave of the meeting to go to that motion now. It's on page 401. Thank you. Essentially asking for landlord's consent, and that would flow on into the lease and so on. Councillor Crossland?
Would it be possible just to ask your staff a couple of questions on the safety of the second-hand equipment?
Yes. Who would wish to answer that? Yes, Ms. Lidicote could answer that.
Thank you. My question really is around from previous meetings when we've discussed playground equipment removal. It's usually removed at the end of life and usually removed when an engineer has said it's no longer safe. I'm just wondering if it has reached the end of life and it can't be maintained, how we can say that some of the equipment can be have a bit of maintenance on and then can be reused for a number of years. It just seems to be in conflict with what we've been told before.
Through the Mayor, yes, it's one of our concerns as well that there are a lot of issues with reusing old equipment, and generally our feedback to community members in the past has always been that it's not possible to do that because it is quite a complicated process. Our seeking advice from the Mutual Liability Scheme did confirm that it is technically possible, and that was part of my meeting with the RSL to explain. I didn't want to give them any false hope that this is something that can happen overnight, and it does take, as you can see through the report, quite a lot of detail to be able to meet the standard. It would be possible with some of the items that are 30 years old in playgrounds might be quite structurally sound because they're big, you know, solid, sturdy swing sets or things like that, but there's certainly a need for an engineer inspection, and also some costs associated with that would sometimes put that cost over the price of buying a new swing. So it is quite complicated, but it's certainly possible if the right equipment was found, the right person was upgrading it to the current standard, and a qualified person was checking that it did meet the standard. But certainly there would be pieces of equipment where it wouldn't be possible.
And the last question, look, I would love to see a playground there, but I wouldn't want to see one that might not be safe. Were there other options considered? I know we've had similar groups come to us before where we've made them a loan and then they've used that loan to apply to the Community Partnership Fund for 50% from us. Was that an option discussed with the RSL where, let's say, $100,000 to build a local playground, whether they could afford to repay half that amount and we would fund the rest?
Through the Mayor, that wasn't an option that we discussed with them. I think the main alternative that we see would be Council setting aside that budget and for Council to fully project manage an installation of a playground as part of our playground strategy or program.
Councillor Hull.
I'd like to move the motion, Mr Mayor, with a fourth point, and that is taking up the RSL's offer of creating a bylaw within the RSL indicating that their membership is expected to provide appropriate parental guidance if they're using poker machines. So that would be my inclusion, addition to that, given that they made the gesture that they would pick up that point. So that's my motion. I think this is the verbiage in here is fairly tight in terms of safety. It picks up the advice from the mutual liability scheme. This may well be more policed in terms of structural integrity than a lot of other playgrounds in our city. I may be wrong about that, but it seems pretty tight.
Councillor Hull, could I suggest some wording for you then? Because it may be better to put it in the lease under Part 2, given that they are conditions already there. So if you added another dot point... the following requirements, that the RSL have a bylaw, that the Marion RSL have a bylaw prohibiting parents from playing gaming machines
while their children are in the playground,
while their good suggestion from the Acting Manager Governance. Something more general about all children being adequately supervised.
It's a good point, Mr. Mayor, because it could be their auntie or somebody else that is giving the supervision, and I don't have a problem with that.
Yes. So, what about that have a bylaw ensuring that all children on the premises are appropriately supervised by an adult? Because, that would cover then you've got a ballet girl who's comes out from the class and is waiting by herself out by the War Memorial alone. Well, we wouldn't want that either, you know. So there's a whole range of scenarios. It's really the child protection and avoiding child neglect that I think is at the heart of your question, Councillor Hull.
And it may be having in particular reference to the playground, because that's what this is all about.
It's a bit beyond carer guardian, because sometimes the child will be left in the care of a ballet teacher, for example. So, you know, you might want to make that responsible adult or something. So would Councillor Hull shaping up?
Yep. Now, I'd like to see a reference to a particular reference to the playground, because it's outside of the building.
The lease, I believe, is for the premises up to the council verge. Could that be confirmed?
Right. Okay.
It's not the building.
Okay.
Yeah. That would be the the car park and everything.
Now, Mr. Mayor, I'm happy to move this, and I'm happy to have this inclusion, because we have had historical issues where hotels with gaming machines have wanted to put in a playground, and there's been concern about that. We can't have double standards with this. So I welcome the RSL's response tonight in terms of having some governance in this area, which is great. Members would realise that I think that the gaming machines are abhorrent in our council facilities. So I want to underline that and highlight that. However, it is what it is, be it 8. It's 8 too many, Mr. Mayor, 8 too many, in my opinion. 40 is just outrageous. A lot of people find it beyond belief that the council would have gaming machines in a council facility. But be that as it may, this is about a playground, and we've got the appropriate governance precaution in there in regards to... sadly, some people do the wrong thing with their children. Gaming machines seems to capture their minds, and their children often are fed and possibly not even supervised. So I think this is a tight motion. It's tight in regards to safety of the equipment, the inspection, and keeping pace with appropriate standards. That's important as well, because the Australian standards change all the time with playground equipment. So I'm happy for this to be recommended to council.
Is that seconded? Councillor Pryor, wish to speak?
Yes, thanks. Look, absolutely, I agree with my co-councillor. I'm happy to have another playground in the area. I think it's a great idea. I appreciate what these guys are trying to do. They're trying to make their facility family friendly. Now, we don't get too much of that these days. So I wholeheartedly endorse this. I'm actually happy to see that some of our equipment may go to a better life as well, because arguably all of our equipment in playgrounds doesn't age at the same rate. And if we're going to take out a playground for one piece of unsafe equipment, then arguably there is some equipment that still meets code. So how we pick through that and find that equipment is the challenge. I endorse this motion wholeheartedly.
Is there anyone speaking against the motion? A question from Councillor Valescu? A real question?
A real question. Can't we just look at providing some funding towards this? Would it be easier and cheaper for all involved if we looked at some funding, and then there's the Fund My Neighbourhood money that we may or may not be able to access, and I guess also there is, I don't know if the partnership money is available. I'm just wondering whether that's a better option. Bearing in mind that I know a lot of the money that the RSLs raise now, and there's more constraints because of what's happening in the state body, goes towards the very valuable and much needed welfare service for a lot of the returning veterans, the recent veterans.
Councillor, thanks for your question. If I can just help to answer that, the motion is about giving permission, right? So that funding question, there's nothing to stop you or any councillor coming back as part of our usual budgetary processes to say, hey, let's help these guys put in that thing for which we have already given permission. So we don't have to deal with that issue tonight, but anyone could come back with it. I just want to clarify one reference you made too, because the Marion RSL operates autonomously in respect of the state branch. So those financial, I mean, the gentleman will correct me if I'm wrong, but the financial woes of the state branch, regrettably, under retired Brigadier Hanna, have nothing to do with the well-being, financial well-being of the Marion RSL. Just for your education.
Another RSL that they're not getting as many funds as they used to, so I've been advised that it has an impact. I didn't know about that relationship, so thank you
sure.
for clarifying
it. I suppose it's at least a technical separation. Maybe there are less grants or something or other. Not sure about that. Okay, Councillor Crossland.
Similar vein to Councillor Valescu's, but without adding it to the motion and making things complicated, can we just have an agreement with staff that they will look at funding options and maybe at least present something of different options for us?
Perhaps that could be discussed at the next ward briefing. That might be the appropriate place to start informally. If there's no one speaking against, I'll simply put the motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. You're free to go whenever you wish, but there's another couple of hours' entertainment if you do wish to stay on. Next item, petitions. Would someone like to move that we accept the petition, talking about page 40 of the agenda. I just look at the due dates there on page 41. We're talking about, I've had a request for the public consultation report to come back in September, so I'm suggesting that it be moved with a due date instead of 22nd August to have just September 2017 would do. Councillor Crossland?
Yes, Your Worship, I'd like to move that way, please, with that amendment.
This is pretty straightforward stuff. Did you wish to speak?
No, thank you.
At this stage, we're just taking on board the information. Is that seconded? Councillor Gard? Let's go straight to a vote. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you.
obviously we're not rushing it through. The substantive debate will come later. All right. Confirmation of the minutes of the Infrastructure and Strategy Committee. Would someone like to move that they be confirmed? Moved, Councillor Westwood. Seconded, Councillor Hull. All those in favour? It's carried unanimously. Thank you. Now we come to one of the more significant items of the night, the Castle Plaza DPA. Now, what I propose here, I think we'll thank you, Mr. Melhuish. He's coming forward to help with questions. What I would say to you, councillors, is that this is a complex matter. There's a lot to it. I think it is one that we can't rush because we're actually setting up a precinct for at least the next decade, if not for a generation. So let's be very patient with questions. Virtually, I'm going to say, as the Chair, unlimited questions before we get into debate, because I think everyone needs to have their questions satisfied. Technically, I mean, it really is about question time, but I suppose technically we should suspend standing orders because normally the limit is three questions each. There might be more. So moved, Councillor Crossland. Seconded, Councillor Gard. All those in favour that we suspend standing orders? It's carried unanimously. Thank you. That just gives us the freedom to discuss the issues. Look, I'll kick off with a couple. First, I want to note that Councillor Pfeiffer has advised me that he has a potential conflict of interest with the matter, so he also apologised for lateness to the meeting, but he does have an interest in a property that's in the general location, so that can be perhaps, I don't know whether that's to be noted now or in reserve in the event that he arrives, but he did want me to pass that on. First question I've got for... Sorry. Okay, thank you, Councillor Carey. Is it... are you suggesting it's a perceived interest because it's in the general area, or if the property value might be affected, could it be a material interest? It's up to you to say. All right, thank you. Sure. First question to Mr. Melhuish. The Urban Planning Committee recommended the version whereby Raglan Avenue would be closed rather than limited to the traffic treatments, etc. So why hasn't that been included in the report for tonight?
Through the Mayor, that's a good question, but I think it's because we're looking at it afresh. It would have been taken into consideration, and the developer would have taken that into consideration as well. But I guess at the end of the day, we've looked at what we thought was the most appropriate process.
Sure. And excuse me, members, I'll go on with a few questions and I'll hand it over to you. I do want to ask about the traffic implications of the development, but just a couple of things that come up in the traffic reports or the reports generally about parking. So the comment is made in the consultation that the development plan for the city has a parking requirement for district centres of 5 spaces per 100 square metres retail, but this plan provides for 4.1 spaces per 100 square metres retail. Is that right? Have I read that correctly?
Yes. The previous traffic report from several years ago actually suggested that 4.1, they mentioned that the development plan required 5, but the standard generally nowadays is 4.1 for the larger type centres. In this particular instance, we haven't actually assessed it against anything, because what we're doing is actually looking at the rezoning and not the development assessment itself. But I did an analysis this afternoon, and looking at the current car parking in the current centre, whether you go for 4.1 or whether you go for 5, there's actually enough car parking.
So why wouldn't we stipulate in the DPA the same requirement that we actually have in our council's development plan, particularly if it's not going to disadvantage the developer?
Sorry, through the mayor, you're suggesting put 5 in there?
Well, I don't understand why not.
Well, generally the rules with a development plan is that you don't double up, and there's a table at the end of the development plan that actually specifies what requirements, what car parking requirements there are for particular types of uses, and there's one for retail that actually says 5 per 100. It's already in the development plan.
So why would we want to do something different in this plan that's presented to us tonight?
Why would we want to do something different?
Sorry, I understood you to say that for the 4.1 figure is in the proposal we're looking at tonight.
It was in the previous proposal from several years ago. I don't think they've actually mentioned the car parking requirement in the latest proposal, but if you use that 4.1 against the number of car parks that are being proposed in the new amended or the extended section, whether it's 4.1 or 5, it works. But as I said, I think what's happened here is that maybe members are getting shouldn't actually mix up that we're actually looking at the development plan amendment. There is, as you said, already a requirement within our development plan for 5 per 100. What we're dealing with is the rezoning. When and if the developer comes along with the development application, then we will actually look at the car parking requirement afresh. If they believe that 4.1 is the appropriate number, then we'll have a look at the car parking afresh.
Okay. I mean, I was asking a question to clarify. I feel more confused now, I must say. But what we have in the paperwork tonight, however 300 and something pages of it, is a mixture of the current application and the old information. So it's actually not easy for members to distinguish between the two. But if the draft DPA in front of us doesn't have 4.1, and therefore by default it's 5 parks per 100 square metres, then that clarifies the matter. Is that the case?
The standard is 5. If, as I said, when a development application comes in, if the developer believes that less than 5 is appropriate, they'll have to prove it to us, but the standard is 5.
All right. Anyway, before I get on to traffic, any other questions? Councillor Gard?
It's a fairly general question, Mr. Hirsch, through the Mayor. I'm interested in just... we speak in one section here about the connection with South Road of both Ackland and Raglan. Projecting forward, we're not hopefully too many years from the North-South Corridor works. Has there been any consideration of how that might change the mechanics of the entrances to those streets? In other words, could we be in danger of over-planning here in the event of there being something different entirely different coming through in the conceptuals, for at least for that that part of the corridor. And I guess what we're looking for, I think everyone's hoping that that section of road will be done within 7 years. That's probably out of limit for speed. But still, to me, my observation would be that it's within our thinking and planning time for this project. So just a general question on it.
Through the Mayor, as part of the process so far, we've had a number of meetings with traffic consultants and with DIPTI. And DIPTI obviously are very much aware of the north-south corridor, so those sort of impacts have been taken into consideration, but it's taken that DIPTI are comfortable with the way that things are going at the moment. This development has to happen, or if this development has to happen, then something has to happen now, and this is what needs to be done at this particular point in time.
Thank you.
I'll just come back to my question about parking. On page 58, you've got the vehicle parking rates for the proposed residential development, and I wanted to ask how they compare to what we're proposing in the Housing Diversity DPA. Has there been a comparison done and a check for consistency?
Through the Mayor, I guess what's happened here is that this particular DPA is in front of the Housing Diversity DPA at the moment. So this is taken generally current car parking, what's treated as the standard at this particular point in time.
But the Urban Planning Committee, through the work on the Housing Diversity DPA, has really thought that standard's not sufficient. Would that be a fair comment?
I'd have to think back on that particular night, but what we're talking about here is a mixed-use zone. We've been talking about other types of zones, and this is possibly a different type of area or zone from what we've been talking about in the Urban Planning Committee. So I really can't make comment on that.
Councillor Appleby?
How extensive was the public consultation on the closure of Raglan Avenue in about 2011? And also, are you confident there won't be any unintended consequences from its closure?
Through the Mayor, the consultation we undertook the normal consultation that you would take with a development plan amendment. That was back in 2011. It was in the put in the advertiser and put on council's website, etc. So this is the standard type of development plan.
Was there a letterbox drop of the area, and if so,
no, there wasn't at that time, but we've over the years, I guess our consultation has been getting better and better, and hopefully anything we do in the future we'll actually look at notifying the appropriate number of people. Well, when I say the appropriate number of people, in different ways.
Just a bit of a technical question, Mr. Benoit-Hewish, but the actual DPA doesn't seem to have I couldn't find the date on it. So is it something that's not dated until it comes through this council process?
The date on the front page will be the date that council actually signs off on it. If that's you.
Yes, who's next? Councillor Hull.
A couple of questions. Parking. Mayor Hannah raises some good questions about parking, but I noticed in recent times we've lost a lot of car parks at this particular facility, Castle Plaza, with a car wash. Now, how did that happen, and what guarantees are there going forward that this won't happen again with some other use that's not really car parking. But this happened at Westfield as well, and I'd like to know how this is happening and why it's happening, because we're setting down provisions tonight, but in a few years' time, suddenly strange things happen. I'd like to know how that can happen.
Through the chair, I'm not au fait with the car wash, but I would imagine that it would have been part of the development application, and as part of that, we would have taken into consideration the number of car parks that were actually on site and whether putting the car wash in there would have reduced it beyond the capacity. So when I looked at the number of car parks, this is going on the traffic report from several years ago, but it looks to me as if there are quite considerable numbers of excess car parks within the Castle Plaza. Whether you if you use the 5 per 100 square metres, there's well over 100 free at the moment.
The other question I got, Mr. Mayor, is the last time the council dealt with this, we actually obtained legal advice in terms of the contaminated land. Now, that was that it would be prudent for council not to have a view on this. This is the residential development, not so much the commercial, and because that could actually lead us to being involved in a class action down the track if it so happened to be that the advice provided by the consultants was not correct. And correct me if I'm wrong, these consultants come and go, companies change names, and it's very hard to actually then go back and pinpoint and hold responsible a person who signed off on that report. And that leaves the councils then vulnerable for a class action. And this has happened in Adelaide. This has happened in Adelaide where developments have happened and it's been found out that council approved residential development on property that was not suitable fit for purpose. So I'd like to know whether anything's changed from last time we dealt with this and the legal advice we had to now.
Mr. Mankiewicz.
Through the chair. No, nothing's changed. The auditor has signed off on it, but the EPA themselves take that report. So if you like, the EPA take the responsibility that they believe that what's been put there by the auditor is appropriate.
If down the track that there was some issue with the land and being used for residential development, would it be possible that a group of people could actually come and sue the council for being part of the approval process for that residential development?
Well, first of all, I hope you're not casting aspersions on the auditor, Mr. W. Pump, who prepared the audit. But in relation to people suing each other, look, you know that I'm not here to give legal advice, but I don't think you have to be a lawyer to know that you can't stop person A suing person B. All you can do is put obstacles in the place of person A succeeding. Now, the situation is that we've received legal advice, we've received audit, environmental audit advice, and it would be reasonable for us to rely on it as a council, unless there was some evidence that suggested that advice was faulty in some way. I don't think I can help you any more with that, and that's just advice that sort of any prudent business person would probably be able to give you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor, and just for the record, I'm not casting aspersions on the auditor at this point in time.
Okay, thanks. Councillor Pryor.
Yeah, I'm interested in the actual options for us tonight. There seems to be two key options. One is close Raglan Avenue or enforce the existing development plan of closing Raglan Avenue. And the second is to allow an amendment which leaves Raglan Avenue open or partially open, if you want to call it that. Are there options for us in terms of how that plan gets implemented if we go with the open Raglan Avenue one? Because I understand the developer wants to leave all of the infrastructure until last, the road infrastructure until last. Is there options for us to enforce that that road infrastructure gets done up front? We actually start with the Raglan Avenue bypass and then allow the rest of the development to commence and go from there.
It's the vexed issue of the difference between the plan and then the application that fits the plan, but I'll let Mr. Montewish explain.
I guess it's up to council which way they want to go, but I think it was explained in the report that the High Street scenario is seen as probably the most appropriate scenario. But the question has been asked that the previous development plan amendment we dealt with, so it's not part of the actual development plan, but it's the development plan amendment we dealt with some year or so ago, was looking at that stage as a road closure or a mall at that stage. The situation has changed for the developer. He doesn't believe that a mall or a closed road scenario will work financially, economically for him. But leaving that aside, if you look at the keeping the road open, it's seen as a better option than the road closure at this particular point in time. Previously, the intention at this point in time is that stage one is the Raglan to remain open, and stage two is to put the connector road and then go into Ackland. So you're sharing the parking. They're sharing the access through the area. It's up to council. There are two recommendations there. I've put in the report which one I think is the most appropriate, but I guess it's up to council to actually make that decision. To actually put the connection in, at the moment it's not just a matter of putting the connector road in between Raglan Avenue and Ackland, because looking at the report from several years ago, it's suggesting there that the intersection with South Road, even several years ago, was at capacity. So to actually put that through now, you'd have to actually upgrade Ackland and upgrade the intersection with South Road as well.
Mr. Montewish, I think the question was a bit more pragmatic in a way, saying that how can whatever council decides in terms of traffic restriction on Raglan or a Link Road or whatever, how does council, or is there a way of council ensuring that that infrastructure gets built at the same time as the shopping centre itself, not years into the future?
Yeah, sorry for that. If it were the if it were just the Raglan Avenue going through, part of the development, well, there will be a land division application that needs to be undertaken to split the land off for the centre itself. But as part of the development assessment, the road, the Raglan Avenue component, if it were to be the High Street, would form part of that application. So you'd have the road and the building created at the same time. I find it hard to if you wanted the connector going through as part of the application, then I guess that's not a decision I can make. That's one for the developer, whether he wishes to take that path.
Just before we go down Raglan Avenue again, I'm coming back to a couple of preliminary sort of questions. On page 95, you've got attachment A, summary and response to public submissions. Now, the way I was reading it is that the submissions in sort of the second column in are actually from a number of years ago, and the comments in the third column and the fourth column, which I think are from the developer and the council, are current comments. But can you please clarify that?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. But what's happened there is that a lot of the, it's a combination of the two because of the changes.
Let's go through it step by step. The submissions in the, obviously, first of all, you have a person or an organisation in the first column. Second column are the comments or objections or praise or whatever it might be. Now, are they all from 5 years ago?
Yes, they would be, because the consultation was undertaken 5 years ago.
Right, and then the third column are the developers' comments, is that right?
No, they're council's comments.
Oh, okay, yeah. So the fourth column, which says council response, that would be from council, wouldn't it?
That's correct.
So why would we have two columns? Our comments and our response. Is that the case?
Well, it's standard that you provide comments, but then the council response is whether you're actually making any changes to DPA.
All right. So, sorry, they're not the developers.
No. So that you've got no change required to the DPA. The other one is just noted, because you've got nothing to say. But the third column is just general comments, and the fourth column is the council response to that, whether we're actually going to make an amendment to the DPA or not because of that comment.
Okay, thank you. Now, one of the comments that council's made on page 106 is that a social audit is being pursued separately to the DPA process. So where's that social audit?
That's from a number of years ago now. That social audit wasn't actually being undertaken by our department. I think it was something, as you said, it was something that was going to be done separate from the DPA.
So given that that actually came from one of the submissions from City of Marion itself, or at least some sort of collaborative meeting involving the City of Marion. So we've suggested that a social audit be done. The comment is that it's being pursued.
Yes.
What's happened in the last 5 years is the question.
I'm actually not aware of what's happened since then. That was something being undertaken by other departments.
Ms. Dixon?
Through the Chair, my understanding that was part of a health lens that Council at the time were putting over the development as well. But my understanding is then with the development, the DPA not progressing, that work didn't progress as well. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks. Right, back to Councillor Crossland first, then Councillor Fyfe.
Thank you. I share some of Councillor Pryor's issues. The first one would be Ackland Street. So just to be clear, if we support that the Ackland Street road development is part of this DPA, as a council, can we insist that that is completed as one of the first stages of delivering this project?
Through the Chair, I guess you can recommend that it happens. The developer first stage, I guess, is the shopping centre, and I guess it's a decision that the developer will have to make whether he's willing to go that way. As I said, it appears that the developer is happy to. I guess from a financial point of view, it's the open Raglan Avenue. If council wants to take it that Raglan Avenue is closed and that the connector road is put in, then that's entirely up to council. I can't speak for the developer beyond that.
When this initially came to council, with the first reiteration of it, Raglan Avenue was closed. And am I correct in saying at that time staff endorsed that closure and recommended it?
That's correct. It was seen as a suitable way of achieving what they were proposing at that particular point in time.
So other than the financial position of the developer, why is the report that's before us tonight clearly worded in a way which supports the opening of Raglan Avenue and highlights disadvantages of closing it? So it would like to seem to be the reverse staff position, yet the only evidence I've heard for changing that position is the financial situation of the developer, which doesn't make sense.
I've gone a mental blank.
Through the Chair, my understanding was the previous DPA, the development was much a more fully developed enclosed mall that combined the retail on both sides of the street, and it was like a mall as we would know it. So this is a scaled back development due to the downturn in retail. So that's where the pros and cons of those options has altered.
To continue with that, I think it's seen that because of the scale of the development, there isn't as much, it's not anticipated that there would be as much pedestrian crossing of that road, making the actual closure or mall or whatever as viable. It was more viable previously because of the scale of the development. This is still sort of one-sided. You've still got the main Castle Plaza on the southern side. So it's seen that in order to enliven it, it's probably going to be more beneficial to remain open and have slow managed traffic going down there.
Last question. I'm one of the people that's very keen to see less traffic light intersections on Main South Road. At the moment, we've got an option of wholly closed, wholly open. There doesn't seem to have been any consideration of maybe making that a one-way street where residents can exit onto Main South Road as a left turn and then therefore getting rid of the traffic lights but still maintaining limited vehicle access to Raglan. Is that an option? Because I have seen it where they've added that type of intersection in Brighton Road and it works pretty well but keeps the level of traffic really reduced in those roads and diminishes the need for an intersection.
Just bear in mind, I did ask for Mr. Allen to be present as well in case we wanted any more detailed questions about traffic in particular. But it's up to Mr. Melhewish if he wants to defer to Mr.
No, Allen. I think I'd have to defer to Mr. Allen because that's a technical question from a traffic point of view.
So I'll ask Mr. Allen to come forward. And the other possibility to throw in the mix there is that there is a reference in one of the reports, I think it's the SKM report from 5 years ago, about a left, I think it's left in, left out only for Raglan Avenue, which changes the dynamic quite a bit.
But that would then again mean that you need two lanes of traffic, so you're limited with what you can do in that space, whereas if it was a single carriageway, I'm just wondering if that gives us more options.
Councillor Crossan's right, it's a different proposition, but perhaps we'll come to it next. So just looking at other possibilities for the eastern end of Raglan Avenue, so Councillor Crossan's suggesting a one-way east. Well, that's as one possibility anyway. What? Any comments?
Through the Chair, I think this needs further investigation, just to understand the traffic movements and the volumes and the impact it has on South Road. Also to liaise with DIPTI, they're the road authority on South Road. I think there are possibilities to incorporate one-way traffic movements in an eastbound direction, but I think it needs to be carefully considered, as well as the impact it has on the shopping precinct.
I suppose where I'm looking at, Mr. Allen, is that the number of cars exiting onto South Road will technically remain constant, and instead of coming out of Raglan, we'll be asking them or forcing them to come out at the intersection of Ackland, but hearing what Mr. Malewish and the developer are saying, there is an advantage to having limited traffic access to Raglan. And so I'm just considering, is it worth having that limited traffic access so they can exit onto Main South Road?
Comment, Mr. Allen? Same, just more on the same. Same comment applies. Yep. Just on the point I was talking about, page 236 of our agenda has the SKM report, and I know that this is only a reference in passing, but in relation to Raglan Avenue, it says businesses, proposed measures, businesses near South Road with accesses off Raglan Avenue will have less direct access in some directions due to the proposed left-in, left-out restriction at South Road, Raglan Avenue intersection. So presumably in conjunction with the road closure, there was talk of left-in, which had come from the southern side of South Road, and left-out, possibly without the need for traffic lights, but I'm not sure. Any comment on that scenario, Mr. Allen?
Through the chair, in terms of the traffic light scenario, we would need to ascertain whether it needed a warrant, and that is based on the fact of traffic volume. So I don't have that modelling at hand in terms of that scenario, so I think further investigation would be required.
All right. Now, I did say that Councillor Pryor was next in line, but over to you, Councillor Pryor.
Yeah, just a quick question about a clarification. We consulted on, in 2011, we consulted on the closure of Raglan Avenue. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, now we're using that consultation data to back up or to change the DPA for not closing Raglan Avenue. Doesn't that seem a little odd that we would do...
Through the chair, I don't think we're using it to back it up. It's just, it's moved on. And if you look at the consultation from 2011, a good percentage of the people that actually put in representations were actually against the road being closed. There was probably a good percentage that were actually against the mall going in there, thinking that access throughout the area was actually going to be worse off than it is at this particular point in time.
Another couple of those preliminary questions. One is referred to on page 86. This was the public submissions, talked about something that was obviously discussed at the time 5 years ago, the notion of moving Woodlands train station, or at least the subway, closer to Raglan Avenue, closer to Castle Plaza. I mean, has there been any contact with DIPT in recent years that suggests that that dream is anywhere closer?
Through the chair, as far as I'm aware, that over the years the question has been asked of DIPT a number of times, but it just hasn't gone anywhere at this point.
Councillor Hull.
Mr. Mayor, we've got the luxury tonight to have from interstate a key person from the organisation that has the aspirations on this site. Given that I can sense that there is a tendency to meet this developer halfway with this, so in other words, keep Raglan open, but at the same time we'd like to see the traffic management volumes addressed by having the other access and egress as well. Would it be possible to ask the chap whether that would be a consideration of his company, that they would actually agree to actually install that road in conjunction with the current DPA? Because I think that could influence a lot of our decision-making.
Well, it's probably fair enough to put that question directly to Mr. Smith or one of his advisers. Welcome, Mr. Smith. So perhaps I can rephrase it in very blunt terms. If council said we approved the DPA but the link road and roundabout have to be built now as part of the DPA,
what would Vicinity's response be?
I think I'd have to take that on notice, but I suggest a reasonable halfway point would be the Link Road and not the upgrade of Ackland Street and the South Road intersection. It's quite clear from the traffic report that the Stage 1 proposal, which is the retail component, doesn't need any traffic work. Raglan Street, as it exists today, and Ackland is sufficient to carry the extra traffic, and that's quite evident from the traffic report that nothing's needed. The whole Link Road and the upgrade to Ackland Street and South Road is because of the redevelopment of the component of the land to the north of Ackland Street. And our proposal really has not been to do that until that Stage 2 is developed. And look, I think we all sit here today, we don't plan to do that. We plan to sell that, and whoever did that would be required to do the upgrade. So if the requirement was that we had to do all of that, look, we would probably object to that. I mean, it may be not unreasonable that we agree to Link Road as part of the redevelopment of the Stage 1, which is the retail component. Certainly the traffic analysis, it does not support in any way that we need to do any of those works as part of the Stage 1. But, you know, I think we've all got to move on. We've all got to compromise. We've sat here for 10 years with a bit of dirt, and there's no way we're sitting here for another 10 years. Our business has changed considerably. It's fair to say we've had enough of this, and we would just be shot of the whole lot tomorrow if we had unreasonable conditions, and we would sell it as an industrial zone. It's 32 titles at the moment. We would, to maximise our price, we just carve off those titles as they are and sell them as industrial zone land, and you'd never have anything there apart from sheds. So, you know, I don't want to be too blunt about it, but we have lost tens of millions of this. We're not here as a developer that gets up and looking to book a profit. We're not going to book a profit. Even with the development, we're going to lose probably $20-odd million on this. We've owned Castle Plaza forever. We intend to own it forever. We're not sitting here as a developer who's going to sit there, do a development, and flog to someone else. We're going to own that thing forever. We've been part of Adelaide for years and years. We intend to be part of Adelaide for years and years. I would hope that we can sort of get to a resolution that doesn't impose too many constraints upon us, and that we can all get on with life and put some economic activity back in it.
Thank you. Since you've raised the economic viability argument, what do you say about the Pitney Bowes report, which does suggest that even allowing for the fact that you've maybe got 60% or so of the increase compared to the time they did their report, the current proposal was much less in terms of redevelopment, but there's still a significant increased annual turnover, obviously, if your shopping expansion goes ahead on the north side of Raglan Avenue. So, I mean,
clarifying. Sorry, what's the question?
Well, the question is, if you're saying that you're at the point of not proceeding with the development, if we said that the Link Road should be done and a roundabout, for example, leave aside Ackland and South Road intersection. If you're saying it's not worth proceeding, I mean, the Pitney Bowes report suggests that is potentially significant uplift in income for you if the shopping centre does proceed.
The development we're proposing essentially is two supermarkets. Supermarkets don't pay a lot of rent. If we did that development, and there's a few specialty shops, you know, we would lose money on that. We wouldn't achieve our hurdle rate return. You know, when I say look, we lose money, we would be sitting at a return of somewhere between 5 and 6%. Not a big return, but given that it's part of a whole retail component, we would expect to deliver value over a period of time. But...
Sorry, Mr. Smith, I'll just help you out here. If you want to go into a confidential session, you can ask us to do that. Are you comfortable with that so far?
So confidential session, can you clarify that?
Oh, it means excluding members of the gallery. The councillors would still be here and a few key staff.
Oh, no, I think I'm comfortable.
Yeah, okay, just checking.
Yes.
Just giving you the option, you know. But no.
Did you have anything more on that?
No, I think... No,
covered?
It's all right.
Okay, Councillor...
or less skewed.
My question is, look, I understand you've got the business, there's the business considerations, that's fair enough. I guess the concern is that if this doesn't happen now, it won't happen, and it won't happen well enough when that other parcel of land is sold, and also if it's needed before then, that extra Ackland Avenue. So I don't know what you have to say on that. Is there anything we can do as part of that sale process that will ensure that something adequate is provided at that point, even though that may not be the most desirable option on our behalf?
Yeah, look, I think the checks and balances are in place. The DPA is quite specific in terms of the master planning for it. So it's quite specific in what's happening on the southern part of the site, which is the retail component, and it's quite specific on what happens on the northern part of the site. And it's also quite specific in terms of when those roadworks have to get developed. There is a deed, it's a tripartite deed, that will be between ourselves, council and DIPTIC to ensure that all those roadworks do get done as part of that northern development. So we're all tied into that together, and DIPTIC insist on a tripartite agreement in order that we as the developer don't avoid our obligations. So if the land gets sold, DIPTIC wants to know that all those roadworks still get put in place. That deed, we've got a draft deed that's just sitting with our lawyers at the moment, and we'll come back to you with an amended version shortly. So you have the checks and balances in place. The DPA covers all the master planning, so you're covered with all of that, and then the tripartite deed ties everyone into the roadworks.
Councillor Crossland.
Thank you. Mr Smith, what would your position be if we did look at a more restricted access egress, or whatever we want to call it, into Raglan Avenue? I know the previous report was a left-in, left-out only, so no right turns.
The left-in, left-out was when it was on the big master plan, because there was a very short section of Raglan that stayed open up until the start of our development. So the left-in, left-out was for people to get into our shopping centre and also to access those three or four businesses that sat on the north side of Raglan. So that's what that was for. If we went to a position now of left-in, left-out along the length of Raglan, there would be... You know, we'd have to do the traffic studies again, but there would be a significant disadvantage to all those businesses along Raglan. We would have a significant problem in terms of getting to our existing Castle Plaza shopping centre. A large portion of the traffic coming up South Road turns left into Raglan and then left into our centre, and they exit the same way. If those traffic patterns were moved, they would be turning left into... the street that's one below, which the name escapes me at the moment, and push Furness. And potentially, for us, there's some problems in directing all that traffic left into Furness and left into Castle Plaza. Then there'd be problems getting from Furness to all those businesses along Raglan, and you'd be pushing more traffic through residential streets.
However, if the Link Road was built and Ackland was complete, what would be the barriers then?
Well, then you've got the barriers of people driving further up South Road and looping back around, and generally people don't like those reverse traffic movements and they tend to cause problems. Well, that's when we were going to close Raglan and we had enough development to support a mall. Unfortunately, time's moved on. We would still build the great big scheme if we thought the retail demand was there, but it was a pre-GFC scheme, and unfortunately retail's not what it was back then.
Mr Smith, if council said yes on condition that the Link Road and roundabout were built and Raglan was closed, there would still be Raglan entrances into the front and the rear car parks, in other words the closure would only be just out the front of the shops that you're proposing to build, isn't it possible that in the future the retail may pick up and you may be able to expand across that closed section?
Look, that's a possibility, but I think we would be of the position, and I know from the supermarket's position, they would require Raglan Street open to get access. If we thought there was enough demand down the track, yeah, we could look at a modified scheme in terms of closing Raglan and building more retail. But where we sit today, the demand's not there.
Okay. Now, people are getting ready to perhaps make a decision, but there may be more questions. Councillor Gard.
Yes, Councillor Cross and I were just discussing a little earlier, just a clarification of the motion. It would seem that option A is really the option that you go for when you want business as usual, Raglan Avenue, and the point of option B is simply if we would prefer the closure of Raglan Avenue. Are we reading that correctly, just before we get to the nitty-gritty?
Yes, essentially.
Hmm. Thank you.
Councillor Pryor?
And do we need a decision on this tonight?
Yes, Mr. Munkiewicz, perhaps you could take us through. We know that the state government have said they want all DPAs done and dusted by the end of this year, and I think that's what's driving the speed of this. Mr. Munkiewicz, what can you add in relation to that?
From what I understand, with our meetings with DIPTI, they are looking at a decision from council sooner rather than later, and I think we're talking, initially they were looking at August.
Right. Well, that's... I mean, if members wanted to defer it for one meeting, I mean, it takes us another couple of weeks away, but, I mean, it would only be if we, you know, needed more information. Councillor Crossland.
Sorry, Worship, but another... Just to clarify on that point too, when we say closure of Raglan Avenue in that motion, is that complete closure pedestrianisation, or is that closure to allow the left in, left out?
No, closure of Raglan Avenue means, an illustration of it, let's say, is on that very last page of the appendices. There's a mock-up, if you like, showing a possible closure at the front of the store, with Raglan Avenue East allowing entrance into the front car park of Castle Plaza as we know it, the western side of Raglan allowing entrance into the rear of Castle Plaza as we know it, and you know there's a rear entrance as well as a South Road entrance. It shows the Link Road as well. So that's what is meant by closure, not sort of cementing the whole street, but just blocking it off at least one point.
I think if that is, I don't know if members are going to go that way, but could that be made as part of the motion, as in the appendix, and have it visible? Because at the moment it's not really referring to exactly what's happening in the motion.
Mr. Munkiewicz, can you advise in relation to wording? Does it need to be more specific in the DPA itself?
Because it makes it sound as if closure to me means there is no cars, as in total closure. But it doesn't refer to an appendix. It doesn't say as per the attached appendix.
I suppose one could add the words closure between the, A points A and B, referring to the two car park entrances to the current Castle Plaza on Raglan Street, something to that effect. What do you think, Mr. Melchiorish?
Yeah, I'm wondering, closure and then you'd say you cannot gain access to South Row. Well, you can. That's it's a difficult one to say, but I think you could say closure and then say a closure between Brooks Avenue and the car parking to the front of the shopping centre. The access point to the shopping centre.
Yes, so it can be done. That would be sufficient, I think, to match that illustration. Just one thing I wanted to say about the bus services, because there was this commentary about problems with buses. I mean, the two relevant buses, Mr. Melhewish, aren't they? The 241, but that comes up in a north-south direction and stops at the back of Castle Plaza and then goes down Raglan Avenue. That would be unaffected by the road closure that we're talking about.
Right. Through the chair. Look, I'm not fully au fait with that particular route, but I was aware that buses go from South Road through to Marion Road, and that's obviously the one that would be affected.
So that's the 190, which at the moment goes from somewhere near Somerton Park to up around Unley area, goes right up the length of Raglan Avenue. At the moment, if that bus is travelling in a west to east direction coming up to South Road, it turns left onto South Road, has to cross lanes and then goes to a right turn lane so it can turn up Edward Avenue towards the Mitcham or into the Mitcham Council area. Again, if you look at that illustration on the last page of the appendices, you can actually see the Ackland South Road Edward Street intersection. So that's where the 190 bus heads. If you closed Ragland as illustrated and had the Link Road, the bus would go around the Link Road and come up Ackland and go straight across South Road. I note there's a suggestion, well, if there was a bus stop on Ackland behind the new shopping centre, that wouldn't be so convenient. But equally, one could say if you put a bus stop on the Link Road close to Raglan, it would be almost as close to the front of the new shops as the current bus stop, which is near South Road. So I just wanted to point out that I don't think the bus argument's all that strong. But Mr. Melviewish, did you want to comment on that?
I guess, through the chair, that what you've said is correct. I guess at the end of the day, it's up to the transport, the transit service themselves, whether they believe it's appropriate or not.
All right. Well, I think we might be at the stage where we're probably going to get into the debate. So, Mr. Smith, thanks for coming forward. Your contribution's been helpful. Probably time to take your place in the gallery. And I'll look to a member to move an appropriate motion. Councillor Gard.
I must say there are some many wheels within wheels with this particular exercise and the options associated with it. I certainly would not want to exacerbate the actual development from a private enterprise point of view. By the same token, I don't think any of us want to come up with a second-rate solution. In the back of my head is this overriding feeling that we should be looking into the longer term and that the north-south corridor almost certainly will be a reality. I don't know whether I'm being naive in saying that, but I truly believe it has to happen. And it is far closer to us than I think we really believe, or some people believe. So I'm inclined to move for the simple solution of one, and to throw the ball into the court for discussion on that. But option one, which involves the development plan amendment as amended July 17, with Raglan Avenue in full operation.
The only thing that I would like to say is that let's get on with it.
Is anyone speaking against or moving any amendment? Councillor Hull.
Mr. Mayor, I'm going to be consistent with my approach to this site. Look, it's a shame that the residential part of the proposal is part of this, because the rest of it is, I would vote for it and speak in favour of it. But the reality is that we know the history of the site. I know it better than most because I was on the council when we got the report that was hidden away in the elected members' room for 3 months before we found it. That indicated the considerable contamination on the site. We have a plume of groundwater contamination emanating from the site that has now crossed Marion Road. It's not a small concern, and we know that part of the remedy to this is to put about that much fill over the entire site. In other words, we cover it over and pretend it didn't happen. Regardless of what auditors say, I have a personal view on the site that I have to take a precautionary measure, as was the legal advice. It's not just me saying this, we had that legal advice. We last time decided to take a position of having no opinion, and that's the position that I think the council should take. So, you know, my opinion was backed up by legal advice. That's a fact. And I don't know why we're actually varying from that. Doesn't mean that we're actually indicating that we're going to stop the development, but we actually are making taking a position that would prevent us being brought into question in the future, regardless of the advice that we give at the moment. So that's the position I'm taking. It's no offence to the developers. I commend them with their negotiations along the way over such a long period of time, but it is what it is. Maybe if they had their time over again, they may not have purchased the site. Sadly, that's the position I'm taking on this. And really, it's the government's decision. It's their department, the EPA, that's advising them. Let them make the decision. Not only, if I can indulge, not only on this contamination issue, but also on whether Raglan Avenue should be open or not, because it's a dip tie decision. It's the main north-south corridor. It's the main north-south corridor and of strategic interest to the state of South Australia. Let them make that decision as well. But in any event, I can't support the motion.
Mr. Munhewish, in terms of process, is there any alternative way forward, such as the Development Assessment Commission, if Council says no to the or doesn't endorse in any sense the proposed DPA?
Through the Chair, I imagine that the Minister could get involved if that is what the developer wanted, if he believed that what he was proposing was suitable. I dare say he can take that avenue.
Hoping for a ministerial DPA or something like that.
That's correct. Wow.
Is there anyone else speaking in favour of the motion? Then I'll ask the mover if there's any need to make a point in reply. Otherwise, I'll put the vote.
No, I think I shall sit.
Very well. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against? That's carried. Division is called. All those in favour, please stand in your place. Those in favour, councillors Westwood, Valescu, Appleby and Gard. Those against are Councillors Pryor, Hull and Crossland. The motion is carried.